Yumadaf Samachtes. Yesterday we began the seventh parak of the Masechta. Sixth parak dedicated itself to the Sir Hamishtaleach, sent by the Kohen Gadol out of the Azara, sent with an Ishiti, a designated individual, who is going to be marching the Sir off to the edge of the cliff. A Mishnah yesterday, in the beginning of the seventh parak, returns us back to the Kohen Gadol in the Azara, in which he's going to be doing Kriyas HaTorah. He's going to be reading from three parshios. We learned the Mishnah yesterday, outlining the parshios that are going to be read by the Kohen Gadol. The brachos that are said after the Kriya, there are eight brachos in total. The Mishnah just simply rattled them off. And then the Mishnah pointed out that there are two events that occur concurrently, and you're going to have to decide. Either you're going to go to witness the burning of the par in the seer, which is done chutz l'gemal machanos, that we discussed extensively in yesterday's daf, or you're going to be able to see the Kohen Gadol read from the Torah, but you can't do both because these events are occurring concurrently and then not occurring in the same location. As far as the Kriyas HaTorah is concerned by the Kohen Gadol, so it's going to be done while the Kohen Gadol is wearing his Bigdei Lavan, or if the Kohen would like to, he could wear his Itztalis. Itztalis is his personal clothing. The Gemara opened up the discussion. We started the Gemara yesterday, but we're going to pick it up right with the Gemara. So we are on Samaches Amud Beis, and we're immediately after the Mishnah. Mid-dekanim Itztalis, Lavan Mishalo. By virtue of the fact that the Kriyas HaTorah can be done while the Kohen Gadol is wearing his own personal clothing, Mechal Dekriya Lav Avodahi. It's evident by that the Kriya done by the Kohen is not an Avodah. If it were an Avodah, obviously it would have to be done while the Kohen Gadol is wearing his Big Day Lavan. He has to wear his Big Day Kahuna. V'ketani Imrasa Le'kros Be'Big Day Butz Korei. And meanwhile, it also says that if he would like to wear his Big Day Lavan, he may do so. So, Shamas Minam Bigdei Kuhuna Nidna Lihanus Ben. So the Gemara says, because this could really be reflective of the following. Gemara discusses a number of occasions throughout Shas, and this being one of the primary locations, in that is a Kohen allowed to do other activities, non-avod activities, while wearing the Bigdei Kohen? Otherwise stated, is a Kohen allowed to get Hana from his Begadim? Begadim obviously are there to help accessorize and facilitate him doing the avoda. But in the event that, let's say, the Kohen, while wearing the Begadim, would like to do a leisure activity, a recreational activity, and we don't have to be that dramatic, just simply an activity that's not Avoda-based and not Avoda-related, so is that going to be like his Mo'el Behekdesh? And so, our Mishnah would seem to indicate that it would be fine. Again, the argument is that since our Mishnah indicates that the Kohen Gadol can wear his own personal clothing while wearing the while reading from the Torah, so that's evident of the fact now that the Kriyas HaTorah is not an avoda, and yet the Mishnah also says that if he would like to, he could wear his Big Day Kahuna. So that would seem to be indicative of the fact that Big Day Kahuna could be worn even while doing a non-avoda. Gemara deflects the proof. Could very well be that we're talking about Kriyas HaTorah. Kriyas HaTorah, despite the fact that it's not an avoda per se, the Gemara over here describes it as tzorach avoda. Previously, we also used this terminology of Tzorach Avoda when we talked about how the cupping of the Kohen, his hands, in order to collect the Ketores, which is going to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so that the Gemara described earlier as Tzorach Panim. This is a little bit different over here, but the idea is generally the same, in that since the Kriyas HaTorah is part and parcel of the Avodas Hayom, even though it's not an Avoda per se, but nevertheless, it's Tzorach Avoda, it's still part and parcel of the day, and so therefore, our Mishnah may not be revelatory about whether or not a Kohen can do a leisure, a personal activity while wearing the Big Day Kahuna. Ibailan, the Gemara now opens up the question as a general question. Big Day Kahuna, Nitna Lahanas Ben, or Lo, Nitna Lahanas Ben. Is a Kohen allowed to get Hana while wearing the Begadim? So Tashma, so the Gemara says, okay, so we turn to a Mishnah in Tamid. Lo, Yushan, Mi Big Day Kodesh. So the Mishnah says that when the Kohanim were there sleeping in the Beis HaMokad, so the Mishnah makes it very clear that they were not allowed to sleep in their Big Day Kahuna. They would be sleeping in the Beis HaMokad. Remember, the Beis HaMokad was divided into north section, south section. North section was stationed outside of the Azara, so the Kohanim could sleep in that area. But the Mishnah Tamid tells us that we have to make sure that we realize that the Kohen is not allowed to wear his Big Day Kahuna while sleeping. And the Gemara now makes a diuk in that Mishnah. Shenuhu delo ha-mechel achle. Oh, well, that means that you can't sleep while wearing the Big Day Kahuna, but you're allowed to eat while wearing the big day kahuna, and eating obviously is a leisure activity. So again, the Gemara deflects. Domashani achila d'tzorach avodahu. Could very well say that we're talking about the kind of achila, which is actually part and parcel of the avoda. The kohen eating carbon chatas, carbon asham, so that's part of the kapara. Kedetanya, the Gemara quotes the brisa, v'achlu osam asher kupar bahem, malam asher kohenem ochlim ubalim miskaprim. When in fact the kohen is given instructions to eat from a carbon, so that actually is part of the kapara process. The pasuk being quoted over here is regarding the miluim, but still the point and the idea is the same, is that when the kohen is instructed to eat the carbon, so that by definition is providing kapara, so we could easily say that despite sleeping in your big dikun is off limits, but eating, however, and specifically eating carbon, so that would be okay. Not only okay, obviously that's part of the avoda. So the Gemara says, okay, let's try it this way. Shenehu deloha hiluchim ahachin. So the Gemara says, let's make the deal like this. The Mishnah in Talmud says that you can't sleep while wearing the big day kahuna, which would indicate that you can walk while wearing the big day kahuna. So the Gemara says, no, again, we deflect. Bedinhu de haluchi nami lo. Could very well be that you're not allowed to sleep, you're not allowed to walk while wearing the big day kahuna, meaning you're not allowed to do leisure activities. V'sefer it's the richlei. And the only reason why the Mishnah talks about sleeping is because the Mishnah wants to make the following point, and that is, poshim and mekaplim and menich and tachas v'sheyam. Meaning, if the Kohen's not going to be wearing his big day kahuna, so what is he supposed to do with the big day kahuna? So the Mishnah tells us direction. Fold the big day kahuna and put it under his head while he's sleeping. That's the only reason why the Mishnah highlights sleeping, but the truth of the matter is that the Kohen is not allowed to engage in any kind of leisure activity while wearing his big day kahuna. So the Gemara says, well, how about this? How about we just simply stay on this last point of the Mishnah, and let's just simply infer from this last point of the Mishnah. And the Gemara immediately jumps into it. Poshim u'mekaplin. Well, if the Kohen is going to be folding up the Big Day Kohuna and sleeping on top of them, basically using it as a pillow, so wouldn't that be a strong indication that the Kohen is in fact allowed to get Hana'a from the Begadim? So this proof as well, Rav Papa deflects. Rav Papa points out that what the Mishnah means in Tamid is not that he's going to put the clothing underneath his head, but rather he's going to put the clothing to the side of his head. What would be the problem of the Kohen wearing the clothing, or for that matter, putting it directly under his head? So Rashi points out over here, the concern is that if he's sleeping with his clothing, so Shami Yafiach, he may pass gas while wearing the clothing, and that obviously would be a bizayon to the clothing. And so even if it's under his head, so that will be a problem as well. And what we're learning now, what Rav Papa is teaching us, is that the chiddush of the Mishnah Tamid is that putting it to the side of his head, even though he's going to be sleeping and even though chances are he's going to pass gas, but nevertheless, that's not going to be considered an affront and it'd be zion to the big day kahuna. So Amar Rav Mishashya Shamas Minat Tefillah Minat Tzad Shapir Dami. So Rav Mishashya says, good. So assuming Rav Papa's pshat, so now we can make the following halachic leap. Well, if the big day kahuna is not going to be nispazit, will not be disgraced when the kohen puts it next to him at night, even though he's going to be passing gas. So the same thing can be said regarding tefillin as well. You're not going to go to sleep with tefillin. In fact, nighttime is not the time for tefillin. But what you will do is you'll put your tefillin next to you, and that will be a way of being shomer the tefillin. And the fact that you're going to you may end up passing gas at night, but that's not a problem. Just like it wasn't a problem regarding the big day kahuna. So hachinami mistabit keneged rasham. Now the Gemara is going to really try to support this pshat of Rav Papa. Right now, even though the Mishnah in Tamid, at the simplest reading, would indicate that the begadim are under the head of the kohen, but the Gemara now is really going to be supportive of this pshat that it was not underneath, but rather it was to the side. How do I know that? Because if you're for a moment going to think that the begadim are going to be under his head like a pillow, it typically mishim kalayim. So we know that one of the articles of clothing of the Kohen is made up of kalayim. Now, I say we know that. In a moment, we're going to clarify. We're not sure about that, but there is an opinion that says that it's kalayim. Da'ika avne, the belt of the Kohen. Belt of the Kohen is made up of shatnez. Now, in a moment, we're going to point out it's a machlokas, but right now, let's assume that the belt is made up of shatnez. So even if we're going to argue, again, what's the larger question on the table is whether or not one's allowed to get hana'ah from the clothing. Even if we're going to argue that you can get hana'ah, which again, we're arguing right now, you can't, but even if we're going to argue that you can, but no one's going to be of the position, no one for a moment is going to entertain the idea that we can override the issur of kalayim, If, in fact, the belt is made up of wool and linen, which right now we're assuming it is, so then it would be a violation of klaim if the belt was directly under the head of the kohen. So this is further evidence and further proof that the Mishnah and Talmud, even though it says tachas rasheim, it really means to the side of their heads. So the Gemara now points out that as much as this argument sounds like a good argument, not everything we assumed is in fact correct. So if you assume that the belt of the Kohen Gadol is the same as the belt of the Kohen Hedjot, so then fine. But if the belt of the Kohen Hedjot is not the same as the belt of the Kohen Gadol, so then this entire proof doesn't get started. And to clarify, we've gone over this point before, but let's go over it again. Let's do Chazara. The Torah does not tell us what the construction of the belt of a Kohen Hedjot is. The Torah just simply says that he's wearing a belt. By the Kohen Gadol, the Torah is very clear. Kohen Gadol is going to be wearing two belts over the course of the year. One belt, 364 days of the year. My numbers are imprecise, but you understand. And one belt, one day of the year, and that, of course, is on Yom Kippur. The belt in Yom Kippur is made up of linen. The belt year-round by the Kohen Gadol is made up of shanes. Normally, you're not allowed to wear shanes. It's true, but if the Torah instructs the Kohen Gadol to make his belt out of shanes, obviously that's going to override. So, fine. So now, what about the belt of a Kohen Hedjot? So the Torah never says. We know, the Gemara over here cites it, it's a machlokas as to whether or not the belt of a Stam Kohen is going to be following the belt of a Kohen Gadol year-round, meaning shanes, or it's going to be following the belt of a Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, meaning not shanes. So the Gemara says, so this entire argument that we gave on behalf of Rav Papa is very good, but only if you assume that the belt worn by the Kohen is made up of shanes. But if it's not made up of shanes, so then the argument goes away. And the Gemara says, now, let's go back and let's go say that it is in fact made up of klaim. Again, as we just noted, not everyone agrees to that, but let's just say it's made up of klaim. Now, as far as the issur of klaim is concerned, wearing klaim is asur. Putting it on top of you is asur. Maybe over here, since we are having the discussion of putting it underneath you, meaning notably as a pillow, so maybe that would be mutter. The Gemara says, but that's not true. Now, why would the Gemara think that there's this distinction to be made between going on top versus going below you? So it's really based on the formulation of the pasuk. The Torah says, lo ya'le alecha, that one is not allowed to put shatnez on top of you. Also, the Torah, in another pasuk, describes it as lo silbash, one's not allowed to wear. So the understanding that the Gemara has throughout Shas, as is the case right over here, is that the only time that one violates the Issur Torah of Shatnez is only when one is wearing the clothing, and the clothing is on you, meaning it's physically on top of you, or you're physically wearing it. If it's underneath you, so mi ikar hadin according to strict letter law, min haTorah, it's going to be mutter. So the Gemara says, that's true, v'hatanya, but we learned in the Brisa, lo yala alacha v'ata mutalatzio tachtecha. So me ikar hadin, meaning min haTorah, the Isra is only to have the shanes on you, but underneath you, like a rug, or like a pillow, or like a blanket underneath you, so then min haTorah, that would be mutter. Aval amru chachamim, asal asos kensha, matichrech nima achas abisaro. However, there's an Isra d'Rabbanan. The Issa de Rabbanan is that you're not allowed to lie on top of shatnez with the concern, lie on top of shatnez, sit on top of shatnez with the concern that maybe one of the strands of the shatnez is going to be loose and you're going to end up wrapping it around one of your body parts in order to warm yourself up. And so therefore, for that Gzera de Rabbanan, so one is mid de Rabbanan prohibited from wearing shatnez. The Gemara says, well, maybe if, let's say, I have layers, and the shatnez that I'm lying on top of is on the bottom, and there are layers of mutter garments on top of that, that doesn't matter. In other words, it's still going to be also mit the Rabban of Amar Rebbe Shimon ben Pazi, Amar Rebbe Yeshua ben Levi, Amar Rebbe Mishum Kala Kedisha Shibushlam Afilo Eser Matzo Zu Agav Zu. Even if I have 10 sheets, one on top of the other, Uklein Tachteim, and the Klein happens to be on the very bottom, there is no way that there's going to be a thread which you're going to end up wrapping upon yourself. Nevertheless, asur lishan aleihem, you still can't sleep on them. Meaning the gzera de rabbanan would incorporate and include any time the shatnez is below you. So elalav shmamina keneged rashem shmamina. So the Gemara says, okay. So if in fact the belt is made up of shatnez, now again, that's open for debate, but if the belt is made up of shatnez, so our point is made, and that is that there would be, admittedly, not nisa deraisa, but still nisa de rabbanan, to put the shatnez underneath you, so therefore it cannot be directly under the Kohen, but it must be to the side of the Kohen. Now, granted, by the way, just make a larger point, granted, now that we've just established that having shatnez underneath you is only nisa derabanan, not nisa deraisa, and generally we do say ein shvus b'mikdash, that there's no isur derabanan in the base of mikdash, but as we've noted numerous times, and here's a perfect example, that's not universal. That's not always true. There are going to be occasions where Isuri Derabanan apply in the base of Mikdash. Here is going to be a wonderful example. All this now has provided sourcing and support to Rav Papa, to the idea that the Mishnah Tami says that you're putting the Begadim underneath the head of the Kohen, basically serving as a pillow. But Rav Papa points out, but what we're going to do is that we're not going to learn the Mishnah Kapshuto, but rather what the Mishnah means is that you're going to be putting the Big Day Kahuna not underneath you, but to the side of you, and basically it's going to be there under your protection, but not directly underneath you. Number one, as the Gemara has been arguing now for a good part of today's daf, right? I'll say it better. Up until now, all of today's daf, the Gemara has been arguing that you're not allowed to get Hana from Big Day Kahuna if you're not doing the Avoda. Again, we're in the middle of that argument, but let's take that position. And on top of that, there's also a shatnez issue as well. That one is not allowed to have shatnez underneath them, midrabanan. So for those two reasons, so that's why the Mishnah in Tamid is not to be understood kipshuta. All this is but one approach of the Gemara. The Gemara, however, immediately gives another approach. Rav Ashi amar olam tachas rashem. Rav Ashi says no. We could talk about how the begadim are directly underneath the head of the coin. The ha'akam etanimi klaim. The Gemara says, okay, what about the klaim issue? So big dekuna kashamein. So the begadim of the coin are very stiff. And ki adam aravuna bered of Yeshua hainamta gamda dinarash sharye. Stiff clothing is not going to be subject to the iser. Now, when I say to the Isser, so which Isser are we referring to? Obviously, we're talking about Shatnez over here, but we've just introduced that. There are two levels to the Isser. One is an Isser Daraisa, of putting it on you, literally on you, on top of you, or you're wearing it like regular clothing. Or the other Isser, the Isser Darabanan, is having it underneath you and being on top of it. So when the Gemara says that stiff clothing that is not providing warmth is going to be mutter, is the Gemara over here referring to the Isser Darabanan, or is the Gemara referring to the Isser Daraisa? For more on this topic, I'm not going to dive any deeper, but for more on this topic, you see the third Tosfos who has exactly this discussion. Anyway, but in the very least, however, we could say definitively that according to Rav Ashi, there's not going to be an Issa de Rabbanan, on stiff material that's not providing any warmth, and therefore to sit on, or to use the belt as a pillow, assuming that the belt is very stiff, is not going to be an Issa de Rabbanan, and therefore we could go back and argue that the Mishnah and Tamid is to be taken literally, that the Kohen is going to be directly over the over his clothing at night, using the clothing basically as pillow. Tashma. The Gemara is going to come to a conclusion on this entire discussion as to whether or not one can get Hana, whether a Kohen can get Hana from his Big Day Kahuna, while wear them while not doing the Avoda. So over here the Gemara quotes the Braisa, and the Braisa is going to be extraordinarily clear. Big Day Kahuna, Hayotze Ben Medina Asar. So to go out with them to Medina's Asar, meaning to basically to take them out of the area of the base of Mikdash, that's going to be prohibited. Rashi points that over here, Shenoeg Bader Chol, it's just simply a mundane activity, and one cannot be that mundane with the Big Day Kahuna. However, Uve Mikdash, but as long as you're in the environment of the base of Mikdash, Bein B'Shas Avoda, Bein Shalom B'Shas Avoda, you're doing the Avoda, you're not doing the Avoda, Motor Mibnei Shebig Day Kahuna, Nitno Lahanos Behen. So over here, the Braisa could not say it any clearer, and that is that one is allowed to get Hana from the Big Day Kahuna. So, Shmamina. So what comes out conclusively from this Braisa is that one is the Kohen is allowed to get Hana from the Big Day Kahuna, even if he's not doing the Avoda, provided that he's going to be in the environment of the base of Mikdash. Okay. So as much as the Gemara went back and forth on this issue for half of the first Amud, nevertheless, the Gemara has a very clear conclusion. And this Braisa tells us that a Kohen is, in fact, allowed to get Hana from the Big Day Kahuna. Continuing now in the Gemara of Medina Lo. Now, what comes out over here is that in the Braisa that we just learned, even though the Braisa was Makel regarding the Kohen's ability to wear the Begadim, nevertheless, once you are outside of the Beis HaMikdash, the Kohen is not allowed to wear it. The Gemara says, however, we have the following, and the Gemara quotes now from Megillas Tanis. Perhaps one of the more famous stories that are told in Shas. And that's the following. On the 25th day of Tevis, various kirsos in terms of when exactly was the correct date, but just to stick with our gear so that we have an Argamara. Yom Hargrizim Hu. So the Mishnah and Tanis tells us, this is now, it's not a Mishnah and Tanis, it's Megillas Tanis. Megillas Tanis is a record of all historical dates that were happy for the Jewish people, days in which we're not allowed to fast, days in which we're not allowed to eulogize. So the Braisa in Megillas Tanis tells us now about this day referred to as Har Grizim. One is not allowed to eulogize on this day, meaning it has an element of simcha, and therefore, if there's a funeral on that day, so it will be without a eulogy. So Yom Shabbik Shukusim is based alakenu me Alexandrius Mokdam lahachrivo. The Kusim asked Alexander to destroy. Just if we can put ourselves in the correct historical perspective, historical context. So we are now towards the beginning of Bayis Sheni. We know that because in a moment we're about to be introduced to Shimon HaTzadik. Shimon HaTzadik, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, was the first 40 years of the second Beis HaMikdash. So we're sometime towards the beginning of Bayis Sheni. Also, living at that time was Alexander Mukdam, Alexander Macedonia, otherwise known as Alexander the Great. And the Gemara now is going to talk about the confrontation that occurred between the two. But before we get to the confrontation, the Braisa tells us that the Kusim were basically whispering in the ears of Alexander and telling him that it is necessary that Alexander conquer and destroy the second Beis HaMikdash. And now, because we know we're about to see Shimon HaTzadik, so this is the newly built second Beis HaMikdash. V'nasalahem bo v'idir Shimon HaTzadik. So, and they went and they informed Shimon HaTzadik. Ma'asa, so what did Shimon HaTzadik do? What was his response? Meaning he knew now that there was going to be a campaign led by Alexander the Great, who was in the process of conquering the entire world. And Alexander the Great was taking his army now up to Yerushalayim in order to destroy Yerushalayim. So what is the response that was going to be done by Shimon HaTzadik? Lavash big dikuhuna minisata big dikuhuna. So he wore big dikuhuna miyakri Yisrael imo, and he was accompanied by dignitaries of the Jewish people, vavuka shor biyadehem, and they had torches, v'chol alay lahalu, halalu hochim itzadzeh, v'halalu hochim itzadzeh. And now you have basically two different groups marching towards one another. Alexander marching Yerushalayim, Shimon HaTzadik leaving Yerushalayim with his entourage in order to meet with Alexander. When we get to dawn, so they had a visualization of one another. They were not yet up one against the other, but they saw one another marching towards one another already by dawn. And so the question was very simple. Who are these people? Yehudim Shemir Dubach. So the Kusim continue to whisper in the ear of Alexander, these are the rebellious Jews. Antipatras. When they get to Antipatras, so at that point in time, the sun rose. And it's at this point in time that you actually had a confrontation between these two collective parties. Alexander takes one look at Shimon HaTzadik, gets off from his chariot, starts bowing in front of Shimon HaTzadik. Amru lo melech gadol kamoscha, yishtachav el Yehudi. Now the Kusim are beside themselves. I have a really good feeling it's at this very moment that they know they're in a lot of trouble. So they turn to Alexander and they say to Alexander, do you know that you're bowing down to this Jew? So and why would you be doing that? So Amr lehem, so his response back to the Kusim, Alexander's responding to the Kusim, demusti yukne shel zeh, min natzeches lefanai bebeis mechamti. So he says, every time I go out to war, so I see this vision before I go out to war. And I realize now that whatever this vision is, I give it credit for helping me win these battles. So Amru lahem lama batam. So he says to them, why did you come? So Amru, so they say, Efshar Baishim is palim bo alecha. So they say back to Alexander the Great, well, look, this is the house, meaning the house that you're looking right now to destroy. That's the house that we go to, the Beis HaMikdash, and we daven on your behalf. V'amachusecha, in your kingdom. Shalotech harev. And we daven that you don't get destroyed. So yatucha ovdi kochav l'achrivo. And meanwhile, you're being misled by these non-Jews that you should, in fact, destroy this this building. So Amar lehem mi'alalu. So Alexander says, well, who's telling me to destroy them? To destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Amrlo, kusim alalu, sha'om defanecha. Well, you're right now being accompanied by them. Meaning, it's the kusim now who are continuously telling you to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. So they're the ones right now who are trying to upset. Meaning, Alexander now ascribes all the success to Shimon HaTzadik and to the Jewish people and to the Beis HaMikdash. And now he was just informed that it's the Kusim who actually were trying to get him to destroy it. So Amar Lahem Harei Heim Mesurim Yadechem. So it's at that point that Alexander says to the Jews, okay, good. Take the Kusim and do whatever you'd like with them. Miyad Nakvum Bakfeim. So what they did is they pierced them in their ankles. Vitalum Bezavne Suseim. And they hang them on the backs of the horses. Vayumigarno Sam Ala Kosim Val Barkanim. Dragging them over thorns and thistles. Aji Yula Hargrizim until they get to Hargrizim Cave. And Shigila Hargrizim. And once they get to Hargrizim. Harshuhu. So they plowed Hargrizim. Vizaruhu. Karshinim, and they planted basically animal food. Kederach shebikshu la'asos l'beis elokeinu, and this was all by way of nekama. This is what they wanted to do to beis elokeinu, so therefore this is what's done to their har grizim. Va'osa yamasu yantiv, and on that very day a yantiv was made. Ad kan. That is the end of the citation of Megillas Tanis, in which now we saw in detail the confrontation between Shimon HaTzadik and Alexander the Great. All this because the Gemara is bothered by the simple fact that you're not allowed to take the big dikun and go out to the Medina. And meanwhile, that's exactly what Shimon HaTzadik does. The Gemara gives two answers to this question. Answer number one is that we're not talking about the actual big dikun being worn. It just happens to be really nice clothing that basically could substitute the big dikun, but not the actual big dikun itself. The second answer, probably you thought of this answer already, and that is, we're looking at the potential destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. We're looking at the possible annihilation of the Jewish people. So, sometimes rules have to be broken. Obviously, these kinds of decisions need to be made by Gedolim. In this case, Shimon HaTzadik, the Gadol Shel Yisrael. But nevertheless, in other words, when you're looking at these kinds of crises, so you need a response that's measured, to the degree of the crisis. Okay, and that's the idea. The Gemara in Gittin describes that when there was a concern that the Torah Shabbat Peh will be lost, and despite the fact that you're not allowed to put the Torah Shabbat Peh in writing, but Rav Yehuda Nasi decided, look, okay, that's the rule, but if we're looking at the potential loss of Torah Shabbat Peh, so it's going to be written down. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the first half of today's daf. I'll make one quick historical point. I've spoken about this in the past. There is a major debate amongst the historians, between the secular historians and the Jewish historians, in terms of the length and the total duration of Bais Sheni of the Second Temple. We have in our Masechta, we saw it earlier in our Masechta, that the Second Beis HaMikdash lasted for a total of 420 years. That number was actually given to us in our Gemara earlier in Yuma, and there are other Gemaras also that speak about this idea of 420 years. Secular historians have the Second Beis HaMikdash going for a considerable amount of time. You'll open up a secular history book, you'll see that the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in the year 586, before the Common Era, and the second Beis HaMikdash was built in the year 516, before the Common Era. To go from 516 BCE to 70 CE, everyone's in agreement that the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in the year 70 of the Common Era, so you're looking at something close to 600 years. Secular historians put the total length of the second Beis HaMikdash at around 600 years, and meanwhile, our tradition tells us that it was 420 years. This is a really large topic, and I am not here to discuss how to make any kind of shalom between the two versions, and that's not going to be the larger point that we're going to make now. I'm just going to make a smaller point, and that is take a look at our Gemara, which we just went through. And you'll find that Alexander the Great is aligned with Shimon HaTzadik, which means, and now obviously our Gemara is following the traditional view, the Masorah of 420 years, that goes without saying. But over here, though, in terms of when we are transitioning from the Persian Empire to the Greek Empire, so it's actually real quick, meaning the Persian Empire started during the Galus, and the Greek Empire, according to our viewpoint, started not much later. Meaning we are now, hard to say exactly, but just to throw out a number, we're about 50 years later, and we find now that already Alexander the Great is confronting with Shimon HaTzadik. Now, I say 50 years because we know that Shimon HaTzadik lived for the first 40 years of the Second Beis HaMikdash. So we know that we're at the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, and we're already looking at the Greek Empire. So it means to say that the Persian Empire, based on our tradition, is an extraordinarily short-lived empire. It did not last a long time. And this is where we have the divergence between our view of history and their view of history. Their view of history, the Persian Empire was a much longer, was a much longer phenomena. And our version, it was significantly shorter. And our Gemara just simply is a really good, a good way of reflecting our viewpoint. It doesn't mean that their viewpoint is wrong. It just simply means that it shows when the transition occurred between the Persian Empire and the Greek Empire, and it just shows a better picture of what our version looks like. Okay. We go back to our Gemara. Our Gemara now, we're three lines from the bottom on Samach Tesaman Aleph, Chazan Knesset, Noto Sefer Torah. So you looked at the procession as the Sefer Torah was handed from the Chazan to the Rosh HaKnesset, to the Skan, and eventually to the Kohen Gadol. And the Gemara says, Shema Minach, Cholkin Kavod LaTalmid B'Makom HaRav, and that means that you can give Kavod to the Talmud in front of the Rav. And this is a topic that's open for discussion, debate. Meaning, are you allowed to give Kavod to the Talmud while the Rav is right there? And would that, in fact, be in front of the Rav? The Gemara says, Amar Abai, so Abai says, look, we don't have to get involved in that debate whatsoever. And that is Kula Mishum Kavod LaKohen Gadol. Meaning, over here, it could very well easily be argued that all this, meaning passing it from the Chazan to the Rosh HaKnesset to the Skan, is all just a means of giving more cover to the Kohen Gadol. Because over here, look how many people are serving underneath the Kohen Gadol. So it's really all just a function of covered Kohen Gadol. So the Gemara says that this is not at all going to affect the question of whether or not you could be wholly covered to the Talmud in front of the Rav. Now, if the Kohen Gadol is standing while to receive the Torah, it means prior to that moment in time we were sitting, and the Gemara says, I don't understand. The Ha'anan Tanan, didn't we learn Tanan Mishnah? The Gemara uses the word Tanan, but most probably it's a Braisa, not a Mishnah. Anyway, as we turn to the Amud Beis, in Yeshiva Bazar, Elulamachi Beis David Bavan. Who could sit in the Azara, but only Malchus Beis David, Shinemar Ve Yavo Amalch David Ve Yeshiv Lefnei Hashem. And the Gemara quotes a pasuk from Divrei Yamim, and we noted before the pasuk is a little bit strange because by David HaMelech there was no Beis HaMikdash. Anyway, but the point is that it's a drasha, could be an asmachta. In any event, the only one who has the right and the ability to sit in the Azara is only the Melech, and anyone else, nobody else is allowed to, including of course the Kohen Gadol. And so, how does our Mishnah give us the indication that the Kohen Gadol was sitting and only standing to receive the Sefer Torah? How could that possibly be? Kedamer of Chista, Be'ezos Noshim, Hachaname Be'ezos Noshim. So the Gemara says, well, when we say the word Azara, it could very well be that we're talking about the Ezos Noshim. Ve'heche Edma de Rav Chista, what was Rav Chista commenting on the following? Meisvei. He's commenting on the following Braisa. Right, the word Meisvei probably needs to be taken out. Anyway. Detani will enter the Braisa. Heichen Korin Bo Ba'azara. How is it read in the Azara? I'm sorry. Heichen Korin Bo Ba'azara. According to the Tanakhama, it's read in the Azara. Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov Omer Bahar Abayis. And Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov says that it was read in the Har Abayis. Shenemar V'yikra Bo Lifnei HaRechov Shalifnei Shar HaMayim. And the Gemara quotes the Pasuk. Seemingly, the Pasuk is there to support Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov. Regardless, the point is that we have a machlokus between Tanayim, where the Sefer Torah is read. Va'amar Rav Chista be'ezos nashim. Now Rav Chista, commenting on the Tanakhama of the Braisa, says that even though the Braisa says the word Azara, it actually means ezos nashim, which is just east of the Azara, meaning, but it's not in the Azara itself. Okay. So comes out over here that based on our understanding of the Psukim in Nehemiah, even though, despite the fact that it says Azara, it really is a reference to the Ezos Nashim, and therefore we're not bothered at all by the fact that the Kohen Gadol is sitting, because we're not talking about the Azar, we're talking about Ezos Nashim. As long as we quote the Pasuk from Nehemiah in the 8th Parak, the Gemara now is going to be spending the balance of today's daf focusing on a couple of Psukim in Nehemiah. Vayivarach Ezra es Hashem Elokim HaGadol, and Ezra gives a bracha to Elokim HaGadol, my Gadol. The Gemara is bothered by the fact that Akash Baruch Hu is given the adjective of Gadol over here. What is specific about this particular adjective at this point in time? Amar Rav Yosef, Amar Rav Shigidlo Shigidlo B'Shem HaMafarish. So they use the Shem HaMafarish. So Rav Gidl, Amar Baruch Hashem Elokei Yisrael Min Olam Ve'ad Olam. And Rav Gidl is of the position that they have a specific response when a bracha was stated. Notably, Baruch Hashem Elokei Yisrael Min Olam Ve'ad Olam. Differing opinions in terms of what the word gadol means, but according to Rav Yosef and the name of Rav, it is that they said the Shema Mefarash. Amalei Abaye le Rav Dimi, v'dima shegila b'shema Mefarash. So Abaye says to Rav Dimi, what's wrong with this pshat? Meaning this pshat that was offered by Rav, so it sounds reasonable. Amalei in omrim Shema Mefarash begvulin. So he says, well, you're not allowed to. In other words, you're not allowed to say Shema Mefarash outside the Ezara. So v'lova aksiv ayamod Ezra sofer al migdal eitz asher asu lidaber. So the Gemara says, okay, but we have another pasuk in Nehemiah where Ezra gets up on the Migdal Eitz, and the Amar of Gidl Shigidl B'Shem HaMafarish, and he said the Shem HaMafarish, and this is not in the Azara, but this is rather outside the Azara, and he said the Shem HaMafarish. So the Gemara says, Harasha Haisa. The Gemara says, no, that was specific to that point in time, but that was not a normative practice that he'd done. Vayetzakul Hashem Elokim B'Kol Gadol. And they called out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, B'kol gadol my amor. So what did they say? Amar Avi Temer Rav Yochanan, bye-bye. They said, whoa. Hainu hai d'echrav l'mikdasha. And the Gemara now is going to be commenting on what was so mournful at this point in time. Meaning, if you think about it, it's a little bit confusing that they were wailing at this point in time when we're talking about the building of the second base of Mikdash. And the Gemara over here is going to inject a pshat in the Pesukim in Nehemiah, and a really interesting pshat. And they said the following, Hainu haidachariv lemekdesha, this is the reason why the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. V'kala lehechala, the hechal was burnt up, v'katlin lekula, tzadike, and all the tzadikim were killed, v'aglinu liyisrael me'aron. And the Jewish people were exiled from their country, v'adayin merake beinan. And it's still dancing amongst us. Now this is a reference to the Yetzirah, and specifically the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah. Klum yahavte lan ella likbule be'agra. The only reason why it was given to us is so that only we could overcome the Yetzer Hara and we could be rewarded. So lo iu binim velo agra binim. We don't want it. We don't want the reward. Nafalu pitko mirikia. So just a quick summary. So basically, what the generation at that point realized is that despite the fact that the second base of Mikdash was built and they were celebrating the building of the second base of Mikdash, but they realized that it was doomed. If in fact the first base of Mikdash was destroyed over there, their overwhelming desire for Avodah Zarah, and the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah is still in existence, and they realize that this is just simply going to be a failed project if they have that kind of Yetzer Hara. A note came out from HaKadosh Baruch Hu from heaven, and the note said Emes, the Havakasa Bay Emes. And Amrev Chanina Shmamina Chos Moshel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emes. The seal of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Emes. Meaning, basically, HaKadosh Baruch Hu agreed, and he said, you know what? You're speaking the truth. Ozve betanisa talse yom vetalse lelusa. They fasted for 3 days and 3 nights. Masruhu niale. And what was at that point done is that the Yetzer Hara was actually handed over to the people at the time. Nafak Asa. Kiguria. It came out. It looked like a lion denura. Like a flaming lion. Mi beis kashe kadashim. It actually emerged from the Kodesh HaKadashim. Amalu navli Yisrael. The Navi said to the Jewish people, Hainu Yitzra davos kochavim. And you needed a Navi to actually identify and say, you see that? Something you don't see every day. You see that? That's the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. Shenamar vayomer zos harisha vayomer zos harisha. And according from the pasuk in Zechariah, which, by the way, would indicate that the Navi that was talking to them was Zechariah. So he says, that's it. That's the evil. Bahadi detafse le ishtamet binisa mimazia. Now, as they were grabbing it, okay, and again, as I'm sure everyone here knows, but just to make it clear, my understanding of all this is extraordinarily limited. But to the best of our ability and the best of our understanding, so we're gonna try. So a hair came out as they were trying to grab it, Viramakala Vazakale, and it let out a loud, we'll call it a roar, Arba Meos Parsa, and extended for 400 parsa. That's basically the Gemara's way of saying it traveled over the entire country. Amru Hechanavid. So what are we gonna do now? Dimachas Rashalam me Rachame Alam and Shemaya. They were afraid that maybe there would still be Rechmanos Faya Kadosh Baruch Hu upon the Yetzer Hara, meaning this is part of, obviously, the divine plan to have the Yetzer Hara, and maybe Kadosh Baruch Hu will have mercy upon it. Amar lehu Navi, Shajua Biduda de Ivra. So the Navi says to him, put it in a lead pot, Vechifil Lepume Be'evra, seal it with lead, De Avra Mishav Sha'iv Kala, because what lead's going to do is it's able to absorb and collect the sound. Shenemar v'yomer zosar v'yishav v'yishtechos el toch ha'ifa v'yishtechos ha'evan al-feres al-piyah. Again, going back to that pasuk in Zechariah, so it's clear that the advice to put it in the lead was given by Zechariah. Amru, so fine. So now they successfully contained the Yetzer for Avodah Zarah, which now we are the beneficiaries of that. In that now, almost 2,000 years later, well, this is the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash. So now, approximately 2,500 years later, as we are, I'll say the vast majority of us are not tempted by Avodah Zarah and have no interest whatsoever in worshiping idols. So to us, it seems weird. Go through Sefer Shoftim, and all you're going to see again and again is the Jewish people being over to Avodah Zarah. The Gemara in Yuma earlier in the Masechta taught us that the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed over the three cardinal sins, including Avodah Zarah. What's so tempting about Avodah Zarah? So the answer is we don't know. But now we have a more complete answer. The answer also is that we no longer have a Yetzer for the Avodah Zarah, so it is hard for us to navigate. I've heard this idea expressed numerous times, and I don't have a direct source, but it's pretty common. It's pretty stated throughout, and that is the idea that obviously we're not going to be tempted by Avodah Zarah. At the same time, however, there are going to be collateral damages, notably that because we're not tempted by the Yetzer Hara, we also lose the balance of the Kedusha that exists on the other side. Everything is a balance, and if we're losing the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, that means that there must complement something that we lost as well, meaning a Koach HaTov, Koach HaTahara, that must have came with it as well. If I can guess, which I'm going to do right now, I'd say that we're probably describing Nevuah, meaning that we know that after the at the beginning of Bayis Sheni, so you had Nevi'im, but that's it. Those were the last of the Nevi'im. Throughout the duration of Bayis Sheni, and obviously from that point going forward, there were no longer any Nevi'im. So if I had to take a guess, I would guess that with the loss of the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, we also lost Nevuah as well. Again, that's the balance of you lose one, you lose the other as well. Amro Holves Rasan Hu Nibai Rachame Ayitzra de Avera. So they said, look, we're on a roll. We already got we already dispensed with the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. Let's dispense with the Yetzer Hara for Arias. By Rachame the Imser Biyadaihu. Arias was handed over. Amru Chazaluhu de Ikatlihu Lu Lay Lahu Kalye Alma. They realized, however, right away that if they destroy the Yetzer Hara for Avera, for Arios, so then there's not going to be any procreation. And the world would come to an end. And they figured that out. So they said, you know what? Let's try it. Chavshu Talsayama, so they imprisoned it, the Yetzer Hara for Arios, for 3 days. Vavu bi'asa basyuma, v'chol eretz Yisrael v'lo ishtakach. They looked for an egg, that was freshly laid within the last 3 days, and it was not. Okay, in other words, without the Yetzer Hara for Arias, there is simply not going to be any procreation on any level. Not in the human world, not in the animal world as well. Amru Echinavid, they said, what are we going to do? Nikdalei. So we're going to kill the Yetzer Hara, Kal Ya'ama, but that will mean basically the extermination of the entire world. There will be no procreation. Nibai Rachamei Apaga. Okay, so why don't we just simply get rid of half of the Yetzer Hara? Paga Berekia Lo Yavu. So it's just simply not part of the rules of engagement. It's either all or nothing. Kachlinu le'ene. But what they were able to do is blind it in its eyes, vishavku, and they let it go. V'hani de lo migre be le'inish v'krivte. And in the very least, what it was able to do is that somebody was not going to be attracted to a direct sibling. So the Yetzer Hara for Arias is still out there, but mitigated only just a little bit, in that no one is interested anymore in close relatives. Bima reva mas nohachin eretz Yisrael. They learned it in the following manner, and that is Rav Gidol Amar Gadol, meaning we are going all the way back. So all this was started by the discussion of what the word Gadol means in the context of Ezra and Nehemiah. Vayivarech Ezra Hashem Elokim HaGadol. And what is meant by Gadol? So we've been entertaining a couple of pshatim. One is Hashem HaMefarsh, the other one is Baruch Hashem Elokei Somen Olam V'Olam. And the Gemara then went off on a tangent. As long as we quoted Pesukim from Nehemiah, we went on to the tangent in terms of what exactly we were wailing and what we did at the beginning of Bayis Sheni, notably the obliteration of the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, and at least contemplating the destruction of the Avodah Zarah for Arias, but that was not done. We are returning all the way back now and offering a different pshat in what Gadol means in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara now is going to say over what was said in Eretz Yisrael. Bimma Arava. Masne Hachi, they said like this, Rav Gidal Amar, let's assume it's Amar Rav. Gadol Shigadlo B'Shem HaMefarish. They praised the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and they made his name great by actually declaring the Shem HaMefarish. The Rav Masna Amar, Hakel HaGadol HaGibor V'Nara. And Rav Masna said, not like we said previously, it's Baruch Hashem L'Kei Yisrael Men Olam Ad Olam, but rather, it's reinstituting, when describing a Kadosh Baruch Hu in Yishmona Esrei, Hakel HaGadol HaGibor V'Nara. V'ha, the Rav Masna, and this coordinates with that which was said by Yeshua ben Levi, Damar Rav Yeshua ben Levi, Lamani Krashman, Anshe Knesset Sagadola. You know, the Chachamim and the Nevi'im that lived in the beginning of Bayit Sheni, so they were referred to as Anshe Knesset Sagadola. So why were they given that particular name, Sheikh Zira Tali Yoshna? Because what they did is that they brought the crown back to its rightful place. Asa Moshe Amar Akel HaGadol HaGibor V'Nara. Moshe gave the descriptions to HaKadosh Baruch Hu using these adjectives. Also, Yirmiyah v'amar nachrim miraktim b'hechalo ayye nora osav. Yirmiyah says, I don't understand. You have the non-Jews now dancing in the Hechal. There's no longer the Nora of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he got rid of that name. Lo amar nora. So he didn't say Nora. Asa Daniel amar nachrim mishtabdim b'vanav. The non-Jews are subjugating the Jewish people. Ayeh gvur asav, where's the gvur of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? La'amar gibor, so he took gibor out as well. Asu inu, along comes the Anshe Knesset Sagadola. Va'amru, and they said the following, Adarabah, zoi gvur, gvur asosh, shekavish etzi tzosh, shenosin erich apayim l'rishayim. Gvur of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not take down his enemies right away, but rather, he has self-control and discipline, and that is gvura. HaKovish es Yitzro, says the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Eloi Nora Seven, the Nora of Hakadosh Baruch Hu, Shomalei Marosh Hakadosh Baruch Hu, Hech Uma Achas Yichol Yiskayim Beno Omos. The fact that we still survive after all these years and all these years of subjugation, so that's the Nora of Hakadosh Baruch Hu. So the Rabbanan Hech Avdi Hachi, the Akre Takana Detakan Moshe. So the Gemara says, now I don't understand. How could it possibly be that we're going to Moshe instituted that we should say Akela Gadol Yibor Vanara, and along comes later Talmid Chachamim and remove. Temporarily, but they remove Gevura and they remove Nora. How do they do that? So Amar Rav Elazar mitoch sheyodim HaKadosh Baruch Hu she'amitihu lefichach lo kizbibo. They said, look, we know HaKadosh Baruch Hu is extraordinarily honest, and anything which gives the appearance of looking like some sort of falsehood, so they'd rather not say it. So that's they felt that being that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is chosam shel emes, second time today's daf who mentioned it, so therefore they felt that it was the right thing to do to take out the kinds of adjectives that don't seem to properly describe a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Adkan, will stop here at the two dots, and tomorrow we will pick it up at the two dots. Meantime, as a quick review of the daf, first half of today's daf, a question of whether or not you're allowed to get hana from the Big Day Kahuna while not doing the avoda. Is there an Isser of Me'ila by Big Day Kahuna? The Gemara's conclusion, no Isser of Me'ila. The Gemara still has a limitation, and that is that the Big Day Kahuna cannot be worn out to the Medina, but as long as you're in the area of the base of Mikdash, Kohen can be wearing it, whether he's doing the avoda or even if he's not doing the avoda. Led us to the Gemara's discussion regarding, there was an occasion historically where we found a Kohen Gadol wearing the Big Day Kahuna, and he was out in Medina. He was well outside the area of the base of Mikdash, Shimon HaTzadik, and meeting with Alexander the Great. The Gemara's response is basically, that was obviously a special event requiring a very special. And in this case, even outside the law's response, the Chazan HaKnesses passed the Sefer Torah to numerous people before going to the Kohen Gadol. The Abaye argues that all that was a way of showing cover to the Kohen Gadol by showing how many people are underneath them. The Kohen Gadol is going to be sitting, and then he's going to stand up. How could he be sitting in the Azara? Gemara's answer: it was not in the Azara; it was in the Ezras Nashim. The Gemara quoted the pasuk from Nehemiah, "Vayikra bo lifnei rechov asher lifnei shara mayim." The Gemara, as long as quoting that pasuk from the eighth parak of Nehemiah, the Gemara quoted another pasuk from Sefer Nehemiah, "Vayivarech Ezra Hashem Elokim Hagadol." And for the remainder of today's daf in the Amud Beis, the Gemara wants to know what does it mean that it says Gadol. So two basic pshatim is that one is that it's they reinstituted using the Shema Mefarish, which was not said once the first base of Mikdash was destroyed. Or another possible pshat, an alternative pshat, is that they reinstituted HaKadosh Baruch Hu, giving him the adjective of Gadol, Gibor, and Nora. And that's why the group that was referred to was the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, because they brought HaKadosh Baruch Hu's prominence back to, meaning, obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need our replacement, but in terms of our perception and the way we were able to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Anshei Knesset HaGedola put it back and reinstituted it. Adkan, and tomorrow we pick it up at the two dots.